Welcome to Recovery Rocks, where we talk about all things recovery and music. I'm Tawny.
And I'm Lisa, and we're really glad you're here.
Welcome to Recovery Rocks. We're glad to be here with everybody. I am here with, as always...
Hello, it's Tawny. What's up?
And we have Lisa. a very special pink-haired friend.
Amazing. Amazing friend. Yes, our friend Jen is with us. And you probably know Jen from Instagram at Resurrection with a K of me. And she is an incredible survivor, mother, advocate, stigma breaker, and space keeper for so many of us.
And a bisexual icon.
Absolutely. And she's also the author of a fantastic book. If you haven't read it yet, it is, you can find it anywhere under her name, Jen Elizabeth. And the book is called Shape of a Woman. And she does a ton of advocacy around helping the unhoused and also with breaking the stigma around harm reduction. And we really want to talk about, I know those issues interact, and we wanted to bring Jen on because Tawny and I are both big believers in the fact that harm reduction saves lives. And we recognize that there has been too much stigma for too long around it. So first off, Jen, first of all, thank you so much for being with us. We are honored to have you on Recovery Rocks.
I love seeing your faces. I haven't seen you in forever, Lisa.
I know. We have to take a picture of our Zoom, a little shot of our Zoom.
Hell. Yeah, do it. Just make sure I'm not
Tawny
like...
on that. Yeah, Tawny, you're in charge of that.
Yes, I am in charge of that. Jen, could you start us off and just let us know, what is harm reduction? If anyone's listening, what does that mean?
So harm reduction, in a nutshell, is basically a commitment to addressing discrimination, and ensuring that nobody is excluded from social services and health services and autonomy and human rights that they deserve. And especially in regards to people's, whether they use drugs or not, gender-based discrimination, gender identity, sexual orientation, race, their choice of work, economic status. It's basically just activism and advocacy for people who have been, most marginalized in society. Is in a nutshell. So there's really no universal definition of harm reduction because it's so vast. For me myself, I do have a more focused, concerted effort in the unhoused population because for me, you talk about people that are unhoused, possibly using drugs. Not everybody who's unhoused uses drugs. mental health issues, identify as transgender, open street sex workers. You're talking about the most discarded human beings on this planet. And I think it's really important, especially in the recovery community. It's very interesting to me the way that many of us can relate to so many of those things, right? I was unhoused for about 15 years of my life, on and off. I was an open street sex worker. I was a person who used drugs. I am a bisexual. So all these things, I'm a survivor of sexual abuse. So much trauma, all these things. And so many of us relate to so many of those things. And yet then when we get sober, for some reason, there is this hierarchy and there is so much stigma inside the recovery community about how you recover or, which path you're on and which is the best. And the umbrella is very much weighted down with religion and the war on drugs. And I don't think people even realize how infected we are by prohibition and religion and stigma and judgment. I see it everywhere. It's everywhere. It's in you know, and I share a lot about the messages and the responses I get from people that are in addiction treatment professions. You know, these are the people that we have entrusted the lives of people who use drugs with to help them to find some sort of wellness. And they are saturated with judgment about, you know, how a person lives. And if we are autonomous adults, we all have the right, believe it or not, we all have the right to use drugs if that is what we choose. For different reasons, you know, many people use many different drugs at different levels for different reasons. Not everybody becomes addicted. Not everybody has substance use disorder or whatever it happens to be. And so when we start judging people and taking away their autonomy, we're policing people is what we're doing. We live in a police society, right? I mean, this is just how it is. This is how our life is. We police everybody. And so in the recovery community, it should be the last place I feel where there's that policing. Because that needs to be the one space where everybody feels finally welcome just as they are.
When you say harm reduction, first thing that comes to mind is like needle exchange programs. Mm-hmm. What are some other, maybe if you could tell the listeners like what a needle exchange program is and how that, you know, the benefit of having these programs and maybe some other real life examples of harm reduction in action right now.
So yeah, a needle exchange program is a great example of harm reduction. So what that means is that we give out new needles. Oftentimes they exchange used needles. That is good for everybody, the entire community. It takes, you know, needles off the street. It helps with HIV, hepatitis C, a multitude of injuries that happen to people who use drugs intravenously. Not only that, it is an act of self-love and self-care for a person to come forward, okay? And they are the most stigmatized, right? For some reason, we have these levels of what is acceptable. It's acceptable to drink alcohol, but it's not acceptable to use heroin. It's acceptable to smoke, but it's not acceptable to use needles. You know, we have all these like checklists, like, and as you move up the checklist, you become more and more stigmatized and more discarded and more judged, right? So somebody who uses, you know, drugs via needles, they are the most like, quote unquote, problematic, I guess. And so when they come forward and have the courage to say, I have used needles, I would like to take care of myself and my community by giving you those and receiving sterilized needles to take care of my health, take care of my family's health, my community's health. It's huge. It's absolutely huge. And I think we talk a lot about how baby steps, right? Like we're all supportive of everybody's baby steps, but we have this like box that you have to fit in, right? Like the baby steps have to be steps that we approve of. But these steps that people take are huge. They're absolutely huge. And the thing is that people who use drugs know better and know best what their needs are. And so we have like the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? And if you stop, whatever level you stop at, whenever those needs are not met, that's as far as you can go, right? You never pass up to healing, to trauma work if you aren't fed. Like you never pass up to different levels if you are completely discarded and are unable to take care of yourself physically. So when we help remove the obstructions that society and the government has placed on people that use drugs, they then have the space to look a little further and look a little further. I run a needle exchange. Also there's safer smoking supplies, which would be, you know, pipes that people use to smoke drugs with. Again, helps with multitude of health, you know, things for the community. It takes broken pipes and stuff off the street, gives them fresh new supplies. And what's interesting too is, so I, you know, like I said, you know, I have a long, long history of IV drug use. Never once did we have harm reduction back then. So I'm going to be 10 years sober May 1st. Woo, woo.
Yes.
And even in that, just that short amount of time of sobriety that I have, the accessibility to harm reduction has grown, and the evidence that we have found in the studies, and people are starting to come around to it. We didn't have that when I was using. That does not stop somebody from using, right? So there's a misconception and a belief that if you give people the supplies that they need to use as safely as possible, that's going to make them want to use longer. Like, it doesn't matter. I used to find needles on the ground and use 2 pennies and sharpen them. Mm-hmm. Like, I would use no matter what, right? It doesn't even matter.
100%.
And so why I don't believe in obstructing people from being able to use as safely as possible. We do it with alcohol. We have safe supply with alcohol. We have labels and everything, and you could see exactly what the bottle has. You know exactly what you're buying. You know exactly what this alcohol does, that alcohol does, even how much sugar and carbs and all that shit's in it. We respect your autonomy, your agency to go in, make an informed decision.
That's a great point.
But we have a huge block on anything past that because of the war on drugs. It has nothing to do with the drug. It has to do with the person.
So, okay. This, I am completely on board with you, and Lisa, I know, is on board with everything you're saying. And I feel like there's probably some listeners that are like, but I'm sober.
Yeah.
Why should I care? Like, why should I care about someone who's using drugs, or why should I advocate for someone to use drugs?
Mm-hmm.
And everything you're saying makes sense to me and to Lisa, but like, what would you tell someone who, like, this, what you're saying is completely antithetical to a lot of recovery conversations. So what would you say to someone who maybe doesn't agree with what you're saying with harm reduction?
I think that we all have the right to disagree or agree with anything that we want, right? I don't believe in policing anybody. So I don't believe in policing you. If you absolutely just are just grabbing your chest right now and dying over everything I'm saying, I get it. I totally get it. What I think happens is that we have a lot of fear, right? If we validate someone's life, it somehow invalidates our own. Or if we validate California sober, then does that somehow invalidate abstinence? It doesn't. Mm. It absolutely doesn't. And so I think it's a lot of fear and a lot of our own projection onto other people because we... You know, we all want to be validated, right? Every human being wants to be validated and supported. Everyone. And so we get sober and we all want to be stigma fighters, right? Like, don't stigmatize us for our sobriety. Don't look at us weird because you say we don't drink. Don't look at us strange because now we don't use. Don't look at me strange because I went to prison. I've been in prison. Like, we want to be destigmatized in recovery. But that destigmatization needs to extend back to before, because you can't really destigmatize recovery until you destigmatize addiction.
Oh my gosh, I so agree with that.
Humans are not reduced down to whether they use drugs or drink alcohol or not. We have the human condition is huge, and right, there's one thing like in traditional recovery that they say is that no one is unique, and I call bullshit. I think everybody's unique. I think we are all made up of many different experiences and traumas and abuse and empowerment and dreams and goals and talents. And we have so many things unique to us that I believe that harm reduction is the best way I've ever felt and the best way I've ever seen that treats a person holistically and does not demand that they do something that I'm more comfortable with.
I think this is so important, and it's, to me, it has been really amazing to watch as the recovery community, you know, has had these issues with harm reduction. I just haven't been able to understand it, because I think about when I came in, I'm sober 17 years now, and
yes,
it was, and it was, you know, they said to me, either you go to 12-step or you die. Like, there were no options, you know, there was no California sober, there was no this or that. And it was incredibly, there were people in, you know, and there still are in 12 step who, you know, I had gone on antidepressants immediately when I got sober. And then after about a year and a half sober, I was like, let me see if it's the sobriety or the antidepressants. And so I weaned off and tried and see how it went. And like 3 weeks after I got off, the lights went out. Like it was over. Like I was in like a dark depression. And I remember calling my therapist and saying, I have 4 days before I drink. I don't know why I thought it was 4 days, but it was 4 days. She was like, experiment's over. You're back on the medication. When I went back into, you know, I never shared about that experience in the 12-step rooms because I didn't want to hear it from people who I knew would say, well, you're not really sober if you're on medication. And I feel like we've made a lot of strides in that area that, you know, being on. But again, it's something that is prescribed. It's something that I take to regulate myself, but it keeps me sober. It keeps me functioning. It keeps me whatever it is. Like to me, to see somebody who is practicing, you know, that you meet in your work and you get that person to start participating in a needle exchange or to start taking those first steps, we in recovery should all be going, amazing, congratulations, this is so cool. Because it's recovery, you know, for it is different for everyone else. And there is so much, as opposed to 17 years ago, so much out there saying we welcome all paths of recovery and there is no right or wrong way to recover. And I see it, the talk being talked, but I don't see the walk being walked in the same way. And that to me, I don't get it. Like if you can't root for someone and for your community, get healthier and more compassionate and, you know, be helping. I mean, I remember, and I know, you know, all three of us remember what it was like on the other side of this, what it was like when we were in it. And if someone would have said to me, listen, you know, here's a way that is something to try that may or may not help you, but let's give it a shot. I would have been like, thank you. You know, let me get some relief. And then you see where that goes. But it is not cut or dry. Like, I don't consider people who are California sober, not sober. That's your version of sober. Knock yourself out. Like, we're all being told we don't want to be labeled addicts. We don't want to be labeled alcoholics. We don't want to be labeled. So we have to take that into our communities and practice that.
Yeah, we do. I mean, I come up against it and I get why it's very scary to voice it. Okay. So I refuse. Many, many harm reductionists have a completely abandoned recovery community and they are in recovery, their own, but they've completely abandoned it because it's just so insane. And, you know, the amount of rebuttal we get, and it's just so old school, right? It's like we're still basing like these quote unquote facts on a book that was written in back in the goddamn who knows when. And there's nothing wrong with the 12 steps, okay? Like there's I do them now.
I use them every
there's
day.
Absolutely nothing wrong with 12 steps. I liken it to religion, okay? So you have a book, like different religions have different types of Bibles or whatever. But what happens is there's a book, okay? But then whoever reads that book and has is on a pedestal to then give their perception and their twist on it and their whatever, things start to migrate. And so I don't have a problem with the 12 steps. What I have a problem with is people that interpret the 12 steps the way that they want to interpret it and then dictate how someone else should live their life. Or dictate what is right or what is wrong or who can speak. You know, I did that whole thing where if you were on Suboxone, you weren't allowed to share in a meeting. Mm. That's some fucking shit.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, it's so damaging and harmful to people. And, you know, I really think about like after a few, you know, I had this moment like about 5 years ago where I was like, do I believe this stuff anymore? Like, does this feel good to me in my heart anymore to be so like, until you were willing or had the desire for abstinence, then I was going to tell you that you're not done yet. Go ahead and go back out. Yeah. You need to hit some sort of bottom. This is what we're taught. This is what we're taught in the 12 steps. And I did that for so long. I'm like, do I feel good? And I just was like, no, I don't. I do not feel good doing this anymore. And I really just want to meet people where they're at, wherever that happens to be. And that's when like, I really started like educating myself on social justice, on, you know, all the things that all, you know, apply to all of this. And it's interesting because I did not get sober to impress other sober people.
Exactly. Retweet. Like, I mean, will you tattoo that on my arm, please?
I just don't think that's the purpose. Is that why we're here? To impress other people who have already found sobriety?
No. On the top, absolutely not. Of course not. And I want you to elaborate a bit more on resources, because I feel like you were talking about how you're starting to educate yourself. So mm-hmm. if someone's listening and they want to learn more about harm reduction, where can they go? The first thing that came to mind was Carl Hart. Mm-hmm. This is a controversial episode, so I feel like we can talk about Carl Hart. He just wrote a book called Drug Use mm-hmm. for Grownups. That is a lot of what you're talking about. He's a, mm-hmm. I believe, a Columbia professor who uses heroin, and he likens it to the same way that someone might have a glass of wine when they get off of work. He has a bump of heroin, and like, no one has said that before. You know, at his level, a Columbia psychology professor, no one has made a statement like that before. And that is huge. So, you know, just since we're talking about that, I wanted to bring his name up. So if anyone's wanting to learn more about this conversation, check out Carl Hart. What are some other resources that you would recommend for people that want to learn more about this?
There's a Harm Reduction Coalition, which is a huge organization. They have one all over the world, all over the place. And they have a great website that has lots and lots of information about just your general, what is harm reduction, what isn't, you know, harm reduction. Let's see, what else is there? There's Harm Reduction International. Basically, just go in and Google, you know, harm reduction organizations, go on Instagram and look, you know, look under hashtags of decriminalization, harm reduction, whatever. What you don't want to do is learn about harm reduction from someone who truly actually believes that abstinence is the only way. So a lot of people will say that they support harm reduction as long as it is a stepping stone to abstinence. And although many people who start off in harm reduction services end up finding along the way, a recovery program that works for them, it is not a requirement. It is not an agenda we place above anybody's life, freedoms, autonomy, whatsoever. It's different. It's difficult because people say I support harm reduction, but really they just support Narcan. Right. You know, Narcan is wonderful, but that is not harm reduction. Or I support harm reduction because I supported, you know, Suboxone for 10 days while you detox and then choose to go to the 12 steps. You know, harm reduction is not about that. You know, many, and like Carl Hart, for instance. Okay, that's such an important key that you brought up, because what we need to understand and what we really, really need to understand is where our fear and stigmatization of drugs has come. It is not coming from addiction or any, it's coming from the war on drugs. It is coming from racism. It is coming from the Jim Crow. It's coming from back there. We need to really investigate that and see, why is it that we look at some drugs and think it's okay, but we look at other drugs and we're just shocked that a man can use a little bit of heroin, or someone can use ecstasy on the weekends, or they're microdosing, or they're using marijuana for, you know, whatever reason they're using marijuana for, or whatever it happens to be. Many people use cocaine when they go to Vegas and for the whole weekend. Now, that's not me, right? I cannot. I come from a serious, serious trauma background. Like anything that I find that can take me out of my skin, I use to destruction. That is me. But validating Carl Hart does not invalidate me.
Exactly. Can you talk a little bit about the Sidewalk Project? And in particular, just because selfishly, I want to get involved with you with that this summer, because I'll be fully vaccinated and I want to help, because it looks incredible. So I'm going to volunteer. But I think this is the kind of work in the space that people can help, you know, can help them understand this, and also, you know, what it looks like to be helping on and being an ally on this front.
So the Sidewalk Project is a artist-based organization, right? So most of us are writers, painters, singers, whatever. And it is with a concerted effort, mainly in the Skid Row population of Los Angeles. But there is Sidewalk Projects in Arizona, San Diego. There's one in San Diego, yeah. Orange County. They are everywhere, but this is our biggest one because Skid Row is I believe, the largest and most populated unhoused community in the United States, probably in the world. And so what we do is we go tent to tent and we bring services straight to the people. And that is harm reduction services, food, hygiene. They can get their IDs. I mean, we bring everything. I bring a trauma-informed, you know, aspect to it all. I have a specific project of my own, which is specifically for open street sex workers. And I bring, you know, condoms and just all the things. We have a bad date list, which helps, you know, the sex workers stay aware if there's particular men who are out there. I mean, there's people that drive through there and shoot them with BB guns just for sport. I mean, yeah. This is the way that our world sees poverty.
Right.
Because the truth is that we want to say that these people must have gotten there because they're of their addiction. But actually, the facts and the studies show that most people get there for many other reasons, and addiction is how they cope. So you're talking about abuse, yep. And prison, you know, the prison system, criminalization through generations of their lives, racism, you know, homophobia, transphobia, you know, all sex, you know, discrimination, all these things, all the traumas that they face, then poverty. Like in this country, it should be it is a right that somebody has to have shelter.
Yeah.
Like we have a constitutional right to self-govern.
Yep.
Their rights are constantly and repeatedly just discarded because of their economic status or their sexual orientation or their choice of work. And I just want to speak a bit for a second and probably say something controversial, but hey, it's you guys, so we're good.
Knock yourself out.
When we talk about survival sex work, okay, many people confuse that with trafficking. That is not the same thing. So when you talk about sex work, in general, sex work, there are many, many human beings that are empowered by the sex work industry. They love sex work. And sex work can be escorts. It can be a multitude. Phone sex. It can be actual. It can be whatever. So we need to remember also not to stigmatize sex work as being a victim situation all the time. Okay, it's empowering for many, many people. And they have every right. Sex work is like one of the oldest professions in the world. Mm-hmm. The problem is, and it's the same thing with drugs, and that's why harm reduction focuses a lot on sex workers, is because it's the exact same way that we have umbrellaed on drugs, is that sex work is dangerous. But sex work is not dangerous. Sex isn't inherently dangerous. Sex with strangers shouldn't be inherently dangerous. None of that should be. What makes it dangerous is the way that we have viewed sex workers or sex work and then sex workers. And so we have incredible violence against sex workers.
Same with drugs. I could not agree more with you, Jen. I spent a year researching the sober people in the adult entertainment industry. Mm-hmm. And like actually going out to LA, meeting with some people that are, you know, sober, you know, quote, porn stars, adult actors, entertainers. And I wrote a lot about this. If you're listening and you want to read, like I wrote a piece in Men's Health for it. I did a piece for The Temper, highlighting exactly what Jen is saying is there is this trope of people being victims that choose sex work when there's actually people that are very empowered in the industry. And they're sober and they're like Seth Gamble. He's the top sober, top adult performer. He's won best actor at the adult, two adult different, award shows. the past 2 years, and he credits his sobriety in every acceptance speech. So, you know, these are people that are, there's just a job that they do, and it doesn't have anything to do with, you know, whatever you might stigmatize it with. So just wanted to add that in there before we transition into our music minutes, because is... you know, Jen, you're on Recovery Rocks. So
I mean, what
we
did I
end
think?
Every we end every episode with a piece of music. We call it our music minute. So yeah, like what maybe
what
is there like a song?
To?
Like what are you listening to? Or is there a song that you tie to your recovery? Anything
oh,
that you
no,
want to
talk
about?
Oh no, you're putting me on the spot.
Just tell us what you listen to. What are you like into listening to right now?
Oh my gosh. What am I into listening to right now?
You can even give us genres that you listen to. We're
I like Lord. I like Lord a lot lately.
Oh yeah.
She's great.
Yeah, I've been listening to her a lot lately. I don't know. Gosh.
Do you find
children.
We both find like sort of like a peace and comfort in music. Do you use music that way?
Oh too? Yeah. Very much. Yeah. I love music. I listen to all kinds. Yeah, all kinds of music. Like I like 21 Pilots. Yeah.
Lisa goes on long walks and listens to music.
Yes.
I remember like that's how, didn't you listen to Chromatica that way? You were going
I
on your long
to Chromatica.
5 mile walk.
That's how I discovered. Yeah, I got into that album. Yeah. Yeah. We know we've got to wrap up. So Jen, we want you to tell everybody where they can find you, how they can find you. I think people are going to have questions, want to get in touch, want to follow what you're doing. Give us all the deets.
So you can find me, Resurrection, like you said earlier, with a K _me. Social media is a dysregulating nightmare sometimes for me. So I really try not to spread myself super thin, but I'm on Instagram mainly, but of course I have Facebook and Twitter and all that shenanigans. And I encourage you all to look into the Sidewalk Project, look at the website, see what we do, really just open your hearts to seeing, you know, that these, we are people that just believe in empowering people no matter what they choose to do, no matter where they've been. And I think we should all really, really subscribe to that, whether we're sober or we're not sober. I really refuse. At this point, I am stating that I refuse to give up on the recovery community. I am an active member in the recovery community, and I'm an active member in the harm reduction community. And I believe those things can absolutely come together.
And we are allies with you on that in the sober community. So we will put the link to the Sidewalk Project also in the show notes.
Beautiful.
And thank you so much for joining us today. I know Tawny and I are both really grateful that you took the time to do it because we really think this is important for everyone to hear about.
I'm really grateful because anytime anybody in the recovery community asks to hear about harm reduction, I say yes because I think it's super important. So thank you guys for having
thank
me.
You. And we'll see you next time.
Okay.
Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. And you can find my blog, sobrietyparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.